that's out of bounds.
I don't believe it. I see it, but I don't believe it.
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, Tuesday morning, which means it's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, first edition for this week. We have a problem. There is no Quarters. Quarters is off in Kalgoorlie trying to find gold and attending to children. So I'm Mark Duffett. I'm the senior football writer at the West Australian. I have with me sports writer extraordinaire, covers a multitude of sports, does it very well, Bridget Lacey.
Hi, Duff. Great to be here. I hope to produce a little gold of my own today in Quarter's absence.
That's very, very good. Nice start, Bridget. Very promising. Okay, week one of the AFL finals. What did you make of it? Who were the big winners? And I suspect we already know who the big losers were, Geelong and Sydney.
Yeah, it was. I was really excited about the first. I thought all the matchups were really good going in. Probably three not great games, one really good game, which was, we were lucky enough to see live, Duff, at Optus Stadium, Collingwood and West Coast. But there was some big statement games. Melbourne were probably the biggest winners out of the weekend in terms of where people think they can go, but there's a lot of hype and still they're still one win away from a prelim in it even. So there's a bit to go there, but their performance on Friday night stood out for me.
That was the moment of the weekend for me, the moment early in the last quarter when Nathan Jones kicked the goal, that it probably didn't quite seal the game, but it probably told you they weren't going to freeze in the spotlight and they were going to play the game out, and it was going to be very difficult for Geelong to get back into it. He played his first two finals in his debut year in 2006. He's had to wait 12 years and probably about four rebuilds to get back and play another one. Just a fantastic moment and a captain standing up when his team needed him to, because really this was a 10-goal victory that only appeared as a 5-goal victory on the scoreboard because of poor kicking, really.
Yeah, that's the biggest concern for me coming out of that game for Melbourne, is they should have put Geelong away a lot better than they did. They wasted a lot of opportunity, not just the ones they kicked for goal, but going inside 50, they wasted a lot of opportunities as well. So that's something to clean up, because the Hawks will cut them up, I would have thought, the other way if they do that against them.
So they do play a very ballistic form of footy, and I think they've kind of committed to continuing to do that this year, even though it may cost them a little bit when they go, when they should slow down. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one plays out this week. We'll talk about the matchups on Thursday and what may happen out of this. But at this stage, I favour Melbourne. But you're right, I think Hawthorn's going to be a tricky matchup for them.
Yeah, and we always get sucked in, don't we? The loser of a qualifying versus the winner of an elimination, where we see the good form of the winner and perhaps the poor form of Hawthorn. So bit to play out there, I reckon, with that one.
So what do you make of Geelong? To me, the crazy thing about Geelong is that they filtered all these great champions out, you know, Chapman, Johnson, Kelly, Bartel, and then they've decided, because his name's Ablett, they have to shoehorn little Gaz back in. It's contrary, really, to their list management over the last 4 or 5 years, and it hasn't taken them any further than the first week of September. It looks to me like there's no role players in their midfield. They're all sort of hunter-gatherers of the ball. And it looks to me like they play a style that doesn't stand up in finals, and their 3-9 record in their last 12 finals suggests that. Where to now for the Cats?
Yeah, I think there's been some suggestion that they need to really invest in the draft, which they haven't probably done as much. They tend to top up, don't they? They're able to find players from other clubs like Zach Tui. Tim Kelly, they got last year through the draft, but clearly he's a mature age guy. I don't know. I suspect the Cats will continue to grab players from other clubs. They're going to get Luke Dalhouse. There's a bit of talk about Jack Stephen as well. But I think they need to look beyond that midfield group, and maybe, you know, they still haven't got a good ruckman. Yeah. I mean, that's been a big problem for them for a long time, really since Otten's left the club, hasn't it? So that's where I'd be looking if I was them. They need someone hitting it down to that brilliant midfield.
So let's talk about Tim Kelly. He's really the sort of player they should be looking to retain. His name was thrown up yesterday as one, because he might choose to go home at the end of next season anyway, as one that perhaps they should be putting on the market to see what Fremantle and West Coast have to offer for him now. If you're Fremantle and West Coast, Are you prepared to go after Tim Kelly, and if so, at what price? And if you're Geelong, is he on the market or is he off the table as far as you're concerned?
If I'm Geelong, he's not on the table, but I think they have a problem in the sense that his family setup would mean that there is a compunction to go home, and whether that compunction gets greater at the end of next season when we know he'll be out of contract. That's, I guess, the risk you take. For Fremantle and West Coast, I still believe they have no right to go and get Tim Kelly, who was under their noses for 5 years, and pay overs for him. Please. You know.
So, but what is overs?
So what did they get him with? Pick 24?
Yeah. Is that about right for Tim Kelly, you think? I suspect he's now a 15 to 20 given, or maybe even a 10 to 20 draft pick.
I think you're going to have to be giving up higher than that to get him out now.
Well, I don't think he's a top 10 draft pick, do you?
No, I don't. But I think that's probably what you'd have to give up to get him out of there. That's my point. I don't think, you know, Geelong are going to play hardball there, aren't they? I mean, this is a kid that starred in a star midfield this season. So they would argue that he's worth a top 10 pick, I would suspect.
Yeah, I just don't – look – I don't see that. I think people confuse a great player with a good player playing well in a strong midfield. And to me, Tim Kelly's a good player. I'm really pleased that he's translated to AFL level. I'm really pleased that he's had a good season. I think he's diligent. I think his running patterns are great. I think he's a clean ball handler. I don't think he's an elite ball user. I put it this way.
But nor is Dangerfield.
But Dangerfield's a monster,
yeah,
isn't he? Dangerfield can go forward and kick you 40 goals in a season. Dangerfield can win 20 contested possessions in a game. Tim Kelly can't do those things. To me, ideally, Tim Kelly is the third to fifth midfielder in your midfield group, which is exactly what he is at Geelong.
Well, that's the other unknown, isn't it? How he'd perform in another midfield, in another team. He's certainly blessed with who he's got around him at Geelong, that's for sure, but... You know, he may be one of those players that performs regardless. We don't know, do we?
If you're Geelong, do Harry Taylor and Gary Ablett go on next year because they're contracted too?
Well, I think Gary's talking like he is. Harry had a lot of injuries this year. He would be a concern for me. He played pretty well in that final, but I don't know if Harry's got much left in him from what we saw this season.
So Gary, yes. Harry, no.
Perhaps, yes.
Okay, let's go to the second elimination final, GWS v Sydney. Now, if Geelong's problems are bad, Sydney's worse. They kicked two goals until the last 5 minutes of the game. Lance Franklin got absolutely nutted again by Phil Davis, and basically after the midway point of the second quarter, they got flat out beaten up by the GWS midfield.
And who had lost their best player to injury as well during the game, Josh Kelly. I think the thing with Sydney and Geelong, I think they both teams were quite vulnerable throughout the season but found a way to get themselves into finals, and I think they just got found out when they eventually got there.
Geelong found a way. They played Gold Coast and Fremantle in the last two games.
Yeah, and they got lucky with some other results. So I think Sydney were a bit similar. Their record at the SCG this season was horrible. For a team that's made it a fortress over so many years, they're clearly very buddy reliant. So they need to find another avenue to go. But Dan Hannabry didn't look right all season. Kieran Jack didn't look right a lot of the season. So they clearly had some injury worries up there. But they've still got enough talent coming through, I think, Sydney. They've got some good kids at least. You know.
So they get Callum Mills back next year. He's been a
Isaac Heaney's a gun.
Absentee. Isaac Heaney gun, no doubt about that. But to me, Jack's nearly done.
Yep.
Hannabry's nearly done. And really, if St Kilda's going to be silly enough to take Hannabry off their hands, I think Sydney should be offering him up. I think there's talk of Jake Lloyd being out of contract, getting a lot of interest from Gold Coast, and there's a discrepancy in what Sydney can offer at this point and what Gold Coast can offer. To me, Jake Lloyd's a must-keep for Sydney. He's their main rebounder now. They've already re-signed and committed to Jared McVeigh and Heath Grundy, which I find... interesting. I think that, Alir has shown himself to be a very good defender. They've got Dane Rampey, and they've got a couple of younger players coming through. I'm not sure that they need Heath Grundy to go around again. And Jared McVeigh, we may find that next year was one too many for Jared McVeigh as well, I suspect.
I must say I was surprised as well when I heard about those re-signings. So I would have thought, they're still playing at a high level now, but as you say, you don't know when they're going to drop off. You'd prefer them sort of to go out on top. So a bit of work to do for John Longmire, But you wouldn't sort of bet against them not being in finals next year, would you, Duff? They just seem to show up there every year.
Well, they're going to have to be better at home, aren't they? 5-7 at home this year. Gold Coast beat them, North Melbourne beat them, Port Adelaide beat them, and Adelaide beat them. None of those teams played finals. That's a horrible record for a club that's turned its home ground into such a fortress at the moment. So I guess if you look at that, you sort of think, well, there's upside there for Sydney because... you know, you wouldn't expect them to be that bad at home next year. They're still very buddy-centric, I think, when they go forward. Tom McCartan appeals as a possible alternative there.
Get Sam Reid back. I mean, he was a big loss, wasn't he?
He's like a tease, though, Sam Reid, isn't he? He almost gets there and then he gets injured or he kicks poorly or he's just one of those guys that hasn't quite happened for when we thought it was definitely going to happen for him sort of a few years back.
And the ruckman, of course, they were missing this
season. Naismith injured, and Callum Sinclair. Callum Sinclair had a pretty solid year, I think, but Callum Sinclair is a good AFL ruckman rather than the great one. And then you've got Josh Kennedy nearing the end, Jack and Hannabury, who we've mentioned. So, yeah, big decision time for the Swans, I think. GWS, can they beat Collingwood?
Yeah, I think they can. It depends how those injured players who came back into the team pull up, because often we find the second week is the tougher one, don't we, Duff? For those guys who've been out for a long time, they pull up really sore and they struggle to get back because they were remarkable. Zach Williams, how good was he? Coming off that Achilles. Toby Green, phenomenal. I mean, Deledio was okay. I wouldn't have said he was great, but De Boer, again, really good role player for him. For them, they love him, and for good reason. He does a lot of grunt work. So they all worked out. But whether or not they're going to be able to back up next this week. And then, of course, there's the Josh Kelly part of it. I mean, he's a huge player for them.
It's not a bad replacement. I suspect Ryan Griffin will be the in for Josh Kelly. They may have to tinker with how they use Deledio a little bit and perhaps slide Griffin into the role that Deledio played. There's worse players to come into a team for a finals series than Ryan Griffin. So it's going to be interesting how both these clubs come up, I reckon, because Collingwood put everything on the table for 3.5 quarters against West Coast. They were absolutely magnificent, I thought, at Optus Stadium on Saturday night. And then to do that and to come up short, have to catch the red eye back to Melbourne. We'll get to final scheduling in a little bit, thanks to Eddie Maguire yesterday. They have almost as big a job to get up after that as GWS do, I reckon.
And they also have their own. They have Treloar, they have Goldsack, Jeremy Howe. All those guys came in off layoffs as well, so they do have a similar issue there. So it looks to me like a really evenly matched. I think GWS have more talent there, like more silky talent and better forwards, but there's something about the spirit of Collingwood that's quite strong.
And they have method. I think Collingwood's method is very strong. It's not quite Richmond-esque yet, but it is a very strong method. They trust it. They're learning to trust it more as they go along. And I think they won't trust it any less because of what happened in Perth on Saturday night. I think they'll feel that a couple of moments in the game, the handball that Lewis Jetta was able to pick off, and then the tall forwards for West Coast standing up in the last quarter. I think Collingwood will feel like their method holds up if they apply it in the right way. The Eagles were absolutely fantastic. I think the reason why West Coast has got under people's guard, particularly the East Coast pundits, is they underestimate just how efficient West Coast are. And we thought, before the game, we thought if West Coast breaks even midfield, they win. They eventually got to that point thanks to Elliot Yeo and Jack Redden with a few cameos from Luke Shuey. And I thought Dom Sheed was really solid too through the middle. But if they can get to that point, they have the weapons to hurt you, don't they?
They do. And it's not just the big boys anymore. Those guys at ground level, Willy Rioli, Liam Ryan, Jamie Cripps, they're really consistent as well now. Liam Ryan was the one who was causing a bit of havoc against Collingwood. So if even Kennedy early in the game, when he wasn't grabbing them, he was bringing them to ground for them. So they've got weapons at ground level as well. So that forward line's really, really important for West Coast. And like you say, the midfield is still so underrated, but the way Elliot Yeo and Jack Redden have stepped up this year has been quite phenomenal. People of Brisbane will be crying over the other side of the country watching those two boys go about it. But we heard yesterday from Jack Redden that Sam Mitchell gave his real first bake of the season to the midfield group at three-quarter time. He was none too happy about the way Collingwood were beating them up, and clearly it worked. They really stood up in that last quarter. It was one of their really resilient wins, wasn't it? A man down on the bench, 10-point deficit. It looked like all was against them, but 5-goal to 1 last quarter, it was big.
Let's talk about the loss of Brad Shepherd and what it means. If you're coaching West Coast, is Will Schofield the automatic in for Brad Shepherd?
It looks that way. I think it's probably either him or a Jackson Nelson. Some people talking about Oscar Allen, but he's really a tall like Schofield, isn't he? So if you're going to go for a tall, you probably go for Schofield, who they really trust and like. Very popular part of the team, and Simo talked about how difficult it was to even leave him out against Collingwood where there wasn't a clear matchup. But I think if it's either Hawthorn or Melbourne, I think they can probably find a matchup for him in those forward lines. Would you agree? I think, you know, maybe Schoenmakers comes back for Hawthorn. Maybe he plays on him or a Melbourne. Maybe he can play on a Wiedemann or someone like that. So I think that's the obvious choice for
West Coast. Schofield, because Will's so quick, he can go tall or small. He's quite mobile. He can take one of those mid-forwards. So let's say if they were playing GWS at some point in the finals, you could send Will Schofield to Toby Green if you had to. If you pick a Jackson Nelson, you're basically limiting to yourself to a small or mid defender. And if you pick Oscar Allen, you're basically limiting yourself to a person who can defend tall. So I think Will Schofield, his experience as well, the fact that he's been through a number of final series, everything points to him. I'm not sure that West Coast will win it, but I think they will feel like it's their time. I think they've been in final series since 2015, so this will be their fourth under Adam Simpson. A big core of the group have been in final series before that in 2011 and 2012. So they will feel like this is their time, but there's a lot of seasoning gone into this group. They've had the disappointment of 2015. They've had the false dawns of 2016 and 2017. So I expect West Coast to play very close to their best football in September. Now, whether that's going to be enough to get Richmond on grand final day, I don't know. I suspect it'll be enough. I'm pretty confident it would be enough to get Hawthorn if Hawthorn got through. And I think they would be marginal favourites against Melbourne if Melbourne get through to play them in a prelim. So I'm tempted to say that Brad Shepherd going out is almost a tipping point for West Coast chances, but I just there's an underlying feeling that it's not quite at that point yet. That if Will Schofield comes in and plays his role well, as Dom Sheed has done where Andrew Gaff has been concerned, then I think West Coast is still in with a puncher's chance of taking the flag this year.
I agree. I think their form stacks up. There's no questions they haven't answered this season. There's not one. Apart from the one they'll have to answer if they make it to the MCG on the last Saturday in September. So, yeah,
can they beat Richmond at the MCG?
So really, I think it's great what they've done, and they've proven time and time again they can cover players out of the team, even their most important players. So you'd have to back them in. Clearly Brad Shepherd is a very important player to them. He's one of those goal saving. Like, I'd love to see the stats on how many goals he's saved this season. He's such a desperate defender, smart player, good ball user. I suspect he'll be up there in their best and fairest. So it's really tragic for him, but I don't think it's a killer blow to their premiership chances.
Okay, let's talk about Richmond. They beat Hawthorn on Thursday night. They were challenged early. Hawthorn missed chances. Luke Bruce and Sean Burgoyne. Who would have put money on Luke Bruce and Sean Burgoyne missing from the top of the square?
Yeah.
In a final, that you could have got my money on that one. But after halftime, well, I think Dustin Martin's 15 minutes in the lead into halftime, where he basically created two goals out of nothing and gave them an important defensive 50 exit, that to me was the gap in the game at halftime. And you felt at halftime that if Richmond kicked two of the next three after halftime, it would basically be almost game over. And that's what panned out. And the Hawks couldn't go with him after that.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? I don't know what you made of Alistair Clarkson's comments after the game, to calling the media sheep and talking about that.
I don't know what he's talking about.
He seems to be offended by the fact that people rate him as a coach. Surely tactics still play a role in finals.
Absolutely. I mean,
system's one thing, but then there are tactics that come into to that as well, matchups and you know, do you send someone to Jeremy McGovern, for example? You know,
matchups aren't matchups in the old sense. I mean, Brad Shepherd might play on, like, if West Coast are playing Port Adelaide, Brad Shepherd may go to Robbie Gray or Chad Wingard and play on them pretty much all game. What they're looking to do is they're looking to position players, and that's partly about matchups, but it's also partly about where they play on the ground. So West Coast won't want Shannon Hearn to get caught deep, not because he can't defend deep, but because he can't attack as well from deep. So they'll be looking for another player to take the deepest forward if it works that way. If you're looking at how tactics play out in the modern game, Saturday night's a great example. Buckley opted not to do what Port Adelaide and Melbourne had done with Jeremy McGovern, and basically they tried to play through Brodie Mychek as opposed to putting Brodie Mychek to McGovern. About 20 minutes into the first quarter, McGovern had taken 7 intercept marks. West Coast were 3 goals to zip. Chris Mayne goes to McGovern pretty much as a tag, wasn't it, in the end? And McGovern's influence on the game is very much stymied after that. Conversely, Steele Sidebottom had been tagged out of the game in round 17 or 18 at the MCG by Mark Hutchings. So Buckley positioned Sidebottom more aggressively to make Hutchings play more defensively, which discouraged the tag. And Sidebottom got off the chain for probably 2.5 to 3 quarters before Hutchings was able to exercise some measure of control over him. So you're right. I mean, I understand what Clarko's saying in that they all play their systems, and that is the core of what they do. But there are these little cream on the cake matchups and positionings around the edges where they try to get that edge. So, yeah, I think Alistair's just bleating a bit there.
And you better believe he's sitting there picking apart Melbourne's game plan this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be an interesting one, because when Melbourne played Hawthorn earlier in the year, Melbourne were doing funny stuff with no wings, extra numbers behind the ball, trying to get players spitting through the stoppage and getting advantages that way. They've made great ground late in the season by playing 6-6-6 and making it about their power and their ballistic nature around the midfield. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And for that reason mainly, I give Hawthorn a good chance in this game, when really Melbourne, momentum and form, despite ladder position, says that Melbourne are a massive chance. I think the other thing about this one, Bridge, while something you mentioned earlier, where we often get seduced by the winner of the elimination final and we get very caustic about the loser of the qualifying final, the margins were so narrow between third and seventh this year, I'm not sure that that applies this much this year.
I agree, and I think Melbourne really should have been in that top four, and Hawthorn probably shouldn't have been. I think watching that game Thursday night, it felt to me like that was a top four team playing a bottom top part of the eight team. Well, Hawthorn and Richmond. That's how it felt to me.
Interestingly,
I don't know if that's because Richmond's just that good. That's remains to be seen. But it felt to me like Hawthorn just weren't right at that level that I think West Coast are at, that I think Melbourne are at, that Richmond are at, and probably Collingwood as well.
I think if Hawthorn goes out, then whatever happens in the GWS Collingwood game, I think the best five teams will be left come Saturday when Collingwood runs out to play GWS. GWS, I think we thought they were coming so hard. Then they copped that run of a month where they were down to 18 fit men just about every time they stepped out onto the park. They got run down by Sydney. They got overrun by Melbourne, and people went cold on them. But to me, up until that point, their form through the back half of the season was really strong. And I think Melbourne's form coming into the finals and in the first week of the finals has been absolutely irresistible. Dylan Grimes got the 10 coaches' votes, which is a reminder to all of us. Dylan Grimes did not make the All-Australian team, and we suspect it's because his stats aren't that sexy, because he plays accountable footy, but he plays tall and small. Players on him rarely kick goals. The coaches obviously really highly valued his game on the weekend. Apparently, for about some incredible amount of times this year, the player that he was directly accountable for at any point during the game did not hit the scoreboard. And that's remarkable given the calibre of player around him. So the guys in his immediate vicinity that he would have been matching up at various times, they would have been players like Bruce, like Burgoyne, like Gunston. These are A-graders, and Dylan Grimes just does not give them a sniff.
Another who flies under the radar, a bit like Ben Stratton down the other end, who, of course, injured his hamstring. So, Yeah, there's a few good defenders about. But
so that's a big loss.
It's a big loss for Hawthorn. A bit like Brad Shepherd at West Coast.
Eddie Maguire says the AFL has cocked up the final scheduling. What are your thoughts?
Well, I have to agree with Eddie, really. I don't understand why. I get this whole thing of Richmond finished top, so therefore they deserve the eight-day break going into the grand final. Okay, but let's acknowledge the fact that West Coast travel more miles than anybody else this season, and how about we give them a chop out because they have an automatic disadvantage from across the other side of the country. Let's acknowledge that. But beside that point, you've got Collingwood and GWS who are going to be asked, one of them is going to be asked
a genuine six-day break.
On a genuine six-day break to go and play a rested Richmond who haven't lost at the MCG in, you know, in a year. I don't like it. Why is it necessary?
So did they get it wrong from the outset? Did the fact that we didn't play the Thursday night final here, which pushed Collingwood back into the Saturday time slot for next week because basically they couldn't play Collingwood Saturday night in Western Australia into Friday night at the MCG. Maybe this was all wrong from the start. As much as we had a giggle about the Victorians spewing about having to turn up to footy on Thursday night, maybe the right answer was Optus Stadium Thursday night, Collingwood v West Coast this week.
But they didn't even need to do that. All they needed to do was have Richmond play the preliminary final on Saturday twilight or Saturday night.
Or Saturday afternoon,
yeah.
If they wanted to.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
The TV networks will tell you what's wrong with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay.
And,
well,
and that's what this is about,
well,
really.
Yeah, well, then, you
at
know.
The, at the end of the day.
Don't try and pretend it's a, you know, it's. I tend to think that they could change those rules if they wanted to, really.
So even,
let's give every. My thought is let's give every team the best chance. And let's not give them a disadvantage.
And their thought is, let's get the best ratings we can possibly get. I think that's what it comes back to. Because there is no other reason for doing this, is there really? I mean, the AFL doesn't want to punish Collingwood because Collingwood are every bit as big a club as Richmond. So all the conspiracy theorists that go out there and say, you know, this is to deliver Richmond back-to-back flag. No, it's not. It's about TV ratings. Their problem on the first week was that they thought the least rating game would be the Sydney Derby, so they had to find a time slot for that, and Saturday afternoon they decided was the time slot for that, but that created issues for them with the Magpies. I think the Magpies have been absolutely shafted because they catch the red eye back into Melbourne, which means that Sunday is basically a waste for the players, and then they're playing Saturday, so they're really playing off a 5.5 to 6 day break, and if they win that, then they've got 6 day break in to face the Rampant Tigers at the MCG. I think that's pretty brutal. At least GWS didn't have to go anywhere on Saturday.
Yeah.
And so they're really coming.
They're
off.
Almost advantaged, really.
I think they are, yeah.
But I do like Nathan Buckley's attitude through all this. He said it, I think he said again this morning, he's got no issue with it, not worrying about it. And when he was coming over last week and everyone was talking about how they're disadvantaged and their flights had been delayed and all, he said, oh, yeah, it's been a terrible disadvantage having the week off and getting our players back fit and all that sort of stuff. So he's certainly right messaging coming from the coach, but good on the president for having a crack.
Yes, well, Eddie will have a crack. We know that.
For right. once, Eddie, you've had a crack.
I can tell you, Bridget, I went to the AFL dinner before the game on Saturday night, and I sat in what are best described as lounge
chairs. Yeah, tell us where you sat while we were up at the press box.
Only for the first quarter. I came up at quarter time to make sure I was doing my work for the had to file a colour piece for the Sunday Times. But the seating where the VIP sit on the northern side, on the northern wing of Optus Stadium, is the sort of seating you have in your lounge room.
Yep.
There are lounge chairs. There are recliner buttons. You can have the seat resting back if you like. They have seat service, so people bring drinks to you. I didn't have anything to drink, Bridget. I was very good.
Pleased to hear.
I had one Coke and several waters. I took my brother Brett. He had about 15 beers. I reckon by the time I picked him up from the end of the game, he was at the Camfield and he was selling real estate on the moon by that stage. But What Saturday night did remind us was we are blessed with an unbelievable stadium. And
the noise stuff. I mean, that's the biggest crowd we've had this season.
It was unbelievably
59,585.
Yeah.
So, we hear it a certain amount in the press box, but down where you were.
It's a din.
Yeah.
An absolute din. I was talking to Jack Darling in the rooms after the game, and he said you can't really hear anything out there. There's just this cacophony of sound in the background whenever you're going about what you're doing. And he said basically you have to have instincts as to where everyone is and what they're doing, because you can't actually hear calls or anything like that. It's almost like an unnatural environment. So fantastic stadium. It was all lit up. I suspect it'll be even fuller on preliminary final night. We will be back on Thursday. We'll go through the two games this weekend. We will talk about who's going to win. We might even touch on the Waffle Grand, the Waffle preliminary final between South Fremantle and West Perth. Well done to the Falcons for fighting back after their
one of the great turnarounds of our time, Duff.
Capitulation in the first final against South Fremantle, and well done to South Fremantle for putting up a real fight against Subi. I'll be hoping my boys can do it again and get into give the Lions another crack in the grand final in a couple of weeks. Well done to Subi for retaining their unbeaten record. Well done for all of you for supporting your teams through the season and through the first week of the AFL final series. We'll be back on Thursday to talk to you about the upcoming weekend's matches.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.